Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
I meant those blackout motorized shades.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. I installed these and then got some from my mom. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Hall of Fame son.
They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Blinds.com is the GOAT.
Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off site-wide and free professional installation. Rules and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times?
You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Take talk with you anywhere with the all-new Talk 1370 app. Listen to your favorite shows, keep up with the latest breaking news and more. Search for Talk 1370 in the App Store or find the links at talk1370.com.
It's anywhere I need.
Talk 1370, the right choice.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Les Kaiser, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio. Speed City.
Good evening, gearheads. Welcome to Speed City. We're going to have a very exciting show tonight. Formula One, IndyCar, MotoGP, and more.
I was a sad sack this weekend. I just sat around and watched motorsport all weekend long, hence the beard.
That's true.
I loved it.
Well, you're going to get the chance to talk all about what you saw this weekend. This is John Massengill. That's Jonathan Green. And Mr. Les Kaiser's over there.
Howdy.
So, boys, we had enough motorsport this weekend to keep us busy. But, you know, I think we've got IndyCar to talk about because it was a huge, wild race.
It was a wild, wild west show. No question.
And, of course, Formula One in Canada. That's, you know, there was lots of Americans up there probably and lots of movie stars and tons of actually pretty good race, too. Lots of action going on there.
Yep.
And, of course, MotoGP, too. So we're going to talk all about all those tonight. And but I want to start with Formula One. I mean, Jonathan, this was, talk about Canada in general. I mean, it's really one of the marquee races, really.
Yeah, it is. Montreal's a fun city, full stop. To be honest, there's a lot of comparisons to be drawn with Austin, in all fairness. And I remember that was always the highlight for me when you're doing all of Formula One, when you're doing the whole season, because you are literally, it's a long year and you're going from town to town to town. Some are great. Some are just not so great. Montreal is fantastic because there's such a great nightlife. And more importantly, as Lewis and many of the other drivers alluded to, the fans just love it. They get into it. They cheer all day long. You saw qualifying. There was a huge crowd on Friday, even for practice. They get into it. The whole town, it's on the Ile de Gilles Villeneuve track is on the island. And so it's a unique circuit. But it's also a great, great event. Full stop. So it's got something special about it. And in fact, in the Thursday press conference, Lewis Hamilton said, that there are certain races that stand out and Montreal is one, certainly for him because of his results there. But I think it's true for most of the guys in Formula One that they love that race.
Yeah, I saw in that same press conference, a lot of them said the same thing, and including Fernando Alonso. And by the way, that's one of the topics tonight that we're going to talk a lot about is Fernando Alonso and the Honda engine debacle. Yeah, and we've got some clips from that press conference that talk a lot about that Alonso was talking about kind of the state of the sport, and I just feel like his experience in IndyCar has
exactly
changed him.
I think he's had a taste of a similar sport
with a very different atmosphere.
There's a confluence happening. There's a combination of things happening in Formula One. Some of the stalwarts of Formula One won't like it. And I know if I was back in England right now, I'd probably have my British suspicious hat on, a bunch of Americans buying Formula One, the sport that I love, blah, 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 blah. I'm not wearing that hat now. I'm sitting in Texas and I'm looking at the other side of it and I'm seeing Formula One needs an upgrade. 2.0, please. And I think it's being led by Lewis Hamilton. He's been doing it for a few years. He loves America. You can see by the way he interacts here and how his lifestyle is. Now Fernando's had a taste of it, loves it. They love him. The Indy experience. Zach Brown is an American. Force India are run by an American. I think there's and of course, obviously, Liberty, right at the center of all of this. Sean Bratches was very much in presence this weekend in Canada. There's a whole confluence of things coming together, which I hope are positive. And I think Indy is also playing a big part in that because Indy has got a good show back on the road. The Indy coverage is now second to none. The racing is awesome. We're going to talk about that. But really, it is a case of to start the subject off tonight. Formula One is opening up, and Fernando is basically leading the charge.
Yep, and I think this is going to be an exciting time. I mean, here we are in Austin, Texas, home of United States Formula One, and we hope to reap the benefits of all this change. So
hey, we got Stevie Wonder coming.
That's right.
We can't go wrong.
All right, hey, well, I want to do, speaking of the UK and their hat that they wear in this, let's do this. Let's play this interview we did with Inga Strecka. She's our Formula One European correspondent, and we just caught up with her about 15 minutes ago. And so let's go ahead and play this clip with Inga Strecka. Inga Strecka, welcome back to Speed City. How are you?
Hi, and bonjour, I should say, right? Just talking about Montreal.
There you go.
Yes, that's true.
Absolutely.
How about that Formula One race in Canada?
Amazing. I mean, I love Montreal. It's always a fabulous place, fabulous atmosphere. But it seemed like this year it was even better atmosphere. I mean, can you imagine Fernando Alonso? Well, engine failure again, as it sounded like.
Surprise.
He said engine failure. But then going in on, like, on the grandstands, diving into the fans and smiling and laughing, taking selfies. I've never seen anything like that in Formula One.
There's no question.
I feel sorry for the guy. I mean, it's gone way beyond not being funny to now it's, well, what are you going to do? Well, it's just a matter of where it's going to pop. It popped. I'm going to go meet these people.
I think it's part of his indie experience. And I also think it's part of the Liberty new wave, if you will. Sean Bratch is in the pits, also taking part with Ross Brawn in the raft competition, which used to be held when we were doing Formula One back in the day. I remember that race. But they put it off because it was too much fun. But now it seems to be with Lewis getting, you know, with the 3-2-1s after qualifying with the crowd. I just think there's a much, much clearer engagement, and I'm really all for it. It's great.
Amazing. Amazing. I love it. And as I think I said that before last time I was on the show, you can feel it. You can feel it, like the atmosphere, the people. It's fun. I love Formula One again. I really love going to the races. I love working there. I feel like the luckiest person on earth.
Hey, but how about Fernando's comments that he made earlier this week about how relaxed and casual IndyCar was, and basically alluding to Formula One needs to think about this. I think we're seeing it.
Yep.
Yeah, and at the same time, they are, and that's good, careful not to like copy something else what they are not. So they got to stay what they are. And at the same time, like pinnacle motorsports and all that, but at the same time, loosen up. And that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, I think that's what Alonso is jumping into the crowd. That's a big part of it. He's said, hey, wait a minute, other sports are having fun at this. I think if you boil it down for Alonso, he talked about how much fun he had at Indy.
Yeah.
And how exciting the whole thing was. He's kind of has opened his eyes.
But I have to say the fans have changed a little bit as well. I mean, a few years ago, I would have been really, really scared seeing a driver getting anywhere near the grandstands. And it also depends on where we go.
I mean,
the fans could get like completely crazy and maniac, and you've got to really fear for the safety of the driver. And the fans in Montreal have always been very special and really, really cool. So it was amazing. Or on the other hand, Lewis Hamilton been given Senna's helmet right after scoring pole position.
Yeah.
I mean, those scenes, and then he's laughing. It's like, it was actually quite funny. He was saying, whenever I saw like Rubens Barrichello and these guys like crying on the podium, I've always said, nobody's ever going to see me doing this. So you're not going to see me crying because of God Sent Us Helmet.
I think he had a quiet little cry. And he also noticeably took the flag with him, just as Senna used to in his overalls today, because no one gave him that flag, I don't think. I think that was with him, which is one of the tricks that Ayrton used to pull out, was to, if he did win the race, he had a Brazilian flag with him the whole time. And once again, Lewis won the race and suddenly unveiled a flag.
Yeah.
Very well spotted. Very well remembered as well.
Hey, I got a real serious question for you, Inga. Given that you're on the inside and given that you've got a definite European inside take on this, you know, we're listening to Zak Brown, we're listening to McLaren, we're very interested in what's happening with Fernando. I've said it all along, I feel that Formula One is losing one of its great talents. I'm delighted that he might be, you know, making residence up in Indianapolis anytime soon, but it's a serious story, this, because he's basically said in the Thursday press conference, if things don't improve, if I don't start winning by September, and he was pulled up by one of the journalists who said, you know, I know, and everybody in the room knows that's not going to happen. Are you saying you're quitting Formula One? So my question to you is, Inga, what have Zak and McLaren got to do in terms of either getting out of their Honda deal? What options do they have next year? And what options in Formula One, first of all, does Fernando have? So, fun aside for a second, this is becoming quite an issue for the whole of the sport.
First of all, if I knew all the answers to these questions, I'd probably be made like someone high up in the ranks at McLaren or something like that. No, I mean, it's $1 million question.
Well, I guess I would like to know, do you think there's a possibility of Mercedes engine?
Uh-huh. Well, I don't know. I mean, I'd hate to say it because the Honda engine as such, I don't think it's really that bad, but it does need reliability. And it's just like, oh my God, another one. You know, you can almost not believe it. I don't know. Would it be better for them if they switch to Mercedes? Then, you know, they're on the levels with Williams, with Force India. The Honda, if Honda gets it right and the car's right, then it's their chance. It's their chance to go and beyond. But we thought they might do that this year and it didn't happen again. I don't know. Or maybe Alonso's going to move. Maybe he's going to move to another team. Who knows?
Or another series.
Yeah, well, I mean, the rumor is that Renault is a possibility and it looks as though Julian Palmer is kind of being rumored to be on the way out. I just don't see if that's a great option for Fernando or that much better of an option right now. But you're right. There's not exactly a lot of places, is there?
I'd probably safely suggest he's not moving to Sauber because they're having Honda engines next year.
Yeah, I think you're right with that one, yeah.
Hey, Inga, I appreciate you coming on the show. We're about to run out of time, but I want to ask you, when are you going to get over here? Why don't you come over for both Austin and Mexico City? That would be a great little trip over.
Well, definitely Mexico should be good. There's Ember Lounge, my favorite party. You know, it's going to be really, really cool. They have always special stuff going on in Mexico. I love the Mexico race. It always looks like great atmosphere in those corners where all those fans are. And yes, I know, guys, I have to come and see you in Austin.
Yeah, you do. You definitely do.
All right, Inga Strecka, thanks for joining us on Speed City once again. Our correspondent, thank you very much.
Travel safe.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks, Inga. Soon.
All right. Well, I love to get Inga's perspective. She's been a European correspondent, and she's been in this business for a long time, so she's definitely has the establishment perspective. How about that, Jonathan? We'll call it the establishment.
It's very true. You know, being German and being a pit reporter as many years as she has, she's done radio, TV, and she does written stuff. I mean, she has been one of the F1 insiders for over 20 years now.
I know. I still, you know, with all the change that Liberty's bringing and with Haas and with Coda and everything, I still remember the day when I said to her, essentially, you know, that the Haas F1 team and All America is going to have do really well. And she just laughed and laughed and laughed. And I was like, okay.
There's still a snobbery. But I mean, this part of the conversation that we started tonight, there's still a snobbery on each side of the pond. In life, never mind in sport, but in Formula One, it's probably the most defined in motor racing, brilliantly, because the European established history and the sort of newness of America, the big show, the sort of Barnum and Bailey approach to sport, which I've always loved. I've always loved NFL. I've always loved the American approach to put right. on a show. I think, to be honest, most people do, to be honest. It's a fact. You know, everybody loves the Super Bowl. Everybody loves to put, I mean, you know, it's what America does well. And we all watch the shows. We all watch the movies. We all watch the TV. So, you know, it's a fact that the Americans know how to put on a show better than anybody else, and they do it in sport second to none.
All right, I'm gonna have to say, I'm curious about if there's gonna be any backlash from you Brits in the in the near years of
with Liberty coming in.
Yeah, I think there will be. Yeah, I mean, you know, old school dies hard, you know. You yank that old school tie off, and there'll be a few fuddy-duddies. But I tell you what, if the sport is growing and the figures are there and the fans don't lie, you know, those stands were full. And it just proves that two races in North America may not be enough. You know, Canada and Austin.
Oh, no, we're going to have a gnat kettle of fish again.
You know, it's there to be had. It's another conversation to be had, isn't it?
All right, guys, well, we're going to take a break, and we're going to continue the F1 conversation. We're going to talk some IndyCar also in the next segment, and we're going to talk some MotoGP towards the end of the show. So stay tuned. You're listening to Speed City live in Austin, Texas.
The Augusta motorcycles are the epitome of Italian style, precisely crafted with a passion for two-wheel art on wheels. Ducati Austin are the only MV Augusta and Ducati factory authorized technicians in Austin, servicing all European brands. Check the Brutale Sport Naked, the most extreme essential naked bike ever, or the Turismo Veloce 800, the first revolutionary tourer to be built by MV Augusta. Or if you want a pedigree steeped in racing, then look no further than the World Supersport winning triple F3, 675 and 800. Or go all out for the ultimate legendary F4 MV Agusta. Italian style with Texas soul. Trade-in, consignments welcome and financing available. Ducati Austin and the home of MV Agusta at 818 Breaker Lane, just east of I-35. Precision Camera and Video is the largest camera store in Texas with over 10,000 square feet and packed with all the latest manufacturer offerings. Founded in 1976 and still owned and operated by its founders Jerry and Rosemary Sullivan, Precision Camera is committed to the finest customer experience. With hand-picked products and on-hand experts, you won't find a more helpful, knowledgeable and accommodating sales staff for quality service. Come see for yourself, Precision Camera and Video, 2438 West Anderson Lane.
We know Austin traffic can be a challenge.
Come on, I can try to take you that gap. Put your foot on the gas and move it.
Beat the commute with Time Saver Traffic. Mornings and afternoons on Talk 1370, the right choice.
Here, when you need us, Talk 1370 is the right choice.
This is Alex Kearney. This is Speed City.
Alex Gurney.
Welcome back. We're talking F1. Let's continue to talk the F1 discussion because we've got some clips that I want to play. And I think I want to start with the Fernando Alonso clip because this is from the press conference. Jonathan, why don't you set this up? You're the one that found this and pointed this at me.
The Thursday press conference in Formula One is dull at best, and it has been for many years. And I noticed it in Austin. There were a few, and I purposely asked a sort of random question to Lewis Hamilton about the loss of Prince and Muhammad Ali last year because I knew it would change the mood a little bit because they're fed up. And the Thursday press conference was classic. It was all about Fernando's future. It was about the upgrades for Mercedes, but basically in the end Fernando says, you know, the truth of the matter is we haven't talked about this race, you haven't asked any questions about this race, and you know, I mean, he basically went to the heart of what's wrong right now and why things aren't happening. So yeah, this is what he had to say on the Thursday press conference.
An example is this press conference, you know, has been not even one single question about this race weekend. Not for me, not even for Luis, not even for him, you know, if the future will be okay, if the upgrades will be okay or not. You know, there is always thinking forward too much, you know, about next year, about September, about wherever. So, you know, there is not enough focus on this race weekend, because also the positions, more or less, we know. You know, we can put in a paper the first 15 positions for qualifying and the first 15 for the race, and 99% we will match, you know, every single position. So this lack of uncertainty, you know, this lack of unpredictable race generates a lot of, you know, too much thinking in forward, you know, and too much guessing, you know, that obviously is a good part for some, you know, some part of the sport will benefit from that, because we will have and generate a lot of talks, you know, in the media, and a lot of, you know, fans interactions, but you miss a little bit what is going to happen this weekend. So, you know, it's not being more relaxed or less relaxed in a weekend, but when you come here, you focus with the engineers, you prepare the race, you prepare the strategy, the tire temperature, whatever. You come to the press conference, and that is all about next year, about what Zach said, what about this said, what Toto said. What, so you freeze a little bit, you know, the emotions that you had about racing this weekend. So it's probably what it is.
Yeah, I mean, he put it, you know, I mean, it is a very true factor. I mean, look at where Alonso is right now. I mean, he was part, I mean, he's won two world titles. He was part of an all-dominating McLaren team for at a time. And now, you know, McLaren have gone backwards, quite literally. And so is his career. And I feel for him, because he is a great talent. And he's pissed off. That's as simple as I can put it. But I also think that when you look at and compare with what we saw with Indy on Saturday night, the unpredictability that Formula One doesn't have compared to, let's say, Indy or any other form of motorsport, MotoGP, for example. I think that's it's very hard to get right, because, you know, money talks, and Ferrari and Mercedes put the money in, and so do McLaren, but they got it wrong in this particular instance with their engine, or it's not gone right. But it's a wider issue. It's a much wider issue, which is, you know, Formula One is trying to look for a story that isn't there, because there's not much to talk about at the race weekend, and they need to get back to enjoying the race weekend, which, by the way, that was Thursday. We had a great weekend. We had a great race. People are talking about the race and what happened.
Hey, but, you know, the thing I take away, and we mentioned it with Inga, is, you know, folks are beginning to see more of the personality of the drivers. They're not the doldrum conference or the polished script. And Fernando going and heading out and into the crowd, the audience.
Awesome, yeah.
My gosh, that's great. You know, I hope that's a result of, or I hope that's what we're going to see more of, quite honestly. See the personality, see the liveliness, because, you know, you've dealt with him some, and he's a pretty nice guy and neat guy,
they
but
all
it's
are,
all
actually.
Stifled,
you know,
in the way things are done, you know, that, I mean, my gosh, you know, I keep recalling the Snapchat thing of Lewis, don't do that. You don't have broadcast rights. Really? Yeah,
that's gone, thank goodness.
Well, but that is a good example. And then the idea of Buxton doing the 3-2-1 interviews with the crowd. I mean, they got the mic sorted out now, which was one of my issues with it, because, you know, on and off, but they've got that right now. And the atmosphere was really electric in front of the fans. And then to give the helmet to Lewis in front of those fans. It wouldn't have been the same behind closed doors or in the press conference. It made it because he was there sharing that moment with the people who know what that meant. 65, I want to talk about that, by the way, for a second. 65 pole positions. First of all, it was amazing that Ayrton Senna did it in the short period of time that he had to do it. Remember, the guy basically passed away in 1994. Mm-hmm. His career was sort of, you know, 80, it was 10 years at best where he was at the top.
Right.
And he didn't always have the top equipment, which is where Alonso is now. And he got 65 pole positions. And most real racing drivers, anything can happen in a race. We saw it today. No one can stop you going fastest in the lap. And if you're the fastest guy of the weekend, that's bragging rights. That's basically motorsport at its purest, finest essence, which is, I'm faster than all of you guys. And the reason why that record, and he, by the way, he was the second overall. Schumacher had a better record, which I think Lewis will have time to beat. But why that record was so amazing was that everybody talks about Senna-Prost. And at the time, that 65 pole positions, I think, Prost had something like 33. He was double the amount.
Yeah.
The pole positions in the same era. Yeah. Now, Lewis has done it brilliantly. Not always with the best equipment, but not far off. He's had a, not gilded, but a fairly, you know, he's ridden well through the world of Formula One, getting the right cars and being nurtured by the right teams, right since he was 9 years old. Smart guy. He went up to Ron Dennis and said, I'm going to work for you.
Yeah.
And he did.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, in fact, you know, that's a real cool story. We'll put that podcast out with our one-on-one with Lewis about that story. But it's that kind of excitement, that kind of determination in the opening. I think that Liberty is going to make the difference. I hope we don't run your cohort Brits away from the sport.
We won't.
I don't think that'll happen. Yeah.
I think, you know, I really think that's a very different take. And I think Hamilton, you know, spending so much time in America has kind of caught on to the American boastful persona in some way of showing off a bit. And I think it attracts a crowd.
Yeah, I mean, don't for one thing. I mean, there is a stuffiness about Formula One and there's an old schoolness. But, you know, the most recent thing I can think of in Britain was the Olympics. The difference between sort of what is traditionally Wimbledon and, you know, rugby crowd, you know, typical English sport. The Olympics seemed to overnight change that. It was a festival atmosphere. Everybody came out and got their national flags out. So it's not that Britain won't reject the idea of becoming more of a Spanish feel to it. I use that expression because the Spanish fans for motorsport are probably the most enthusiastic and fervent I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Argentinians in soccer. I mean, you know, Brazilians in soccer.
Well, let's do what Alonso was criticizing about. Let's talk about the race.
Yes, let's do that.
It was a pretty darn good race. And Alonso, one of my favorite parts for Alonso is, did you see him avoid the crash with Felipe Massa? I saw a clip of it up close. I think it was his car, man. He did a fantastic job of not ending up in that mess as well. But both of you guys, what do you think about the race? What were your favorite parts of the race? I mean, Jonathan?
One of them was, that was really not picked up on, was how on earth did Grosjean get a broadside from a Spaniard in the first 2 seconds of the race, manage to somehow survive and score a point? Fast. Brilliant.
Yeah, there was a lot going on around that. And so we'll take the point.
Yeah. Well, it was funny. He swerved into him twice.
Yeah, I don't know what I did.
He swerved him. He went off the track. He came in. He swerved into him again. It was like, what the heck are you doing?
Rugby.
It was a little bit over the top. I don't know why that. I still want to know what Sands was thinking at the time, because it was a very strange maneuver. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the sort of political battle, if you will, between Ocon and Perez for fourth place, effectively, which could have turned, in the team's opinion, into third place, because they felt Ocon in fifth place could overtake his teammate because he was on different rubber, faster rubber, but he couldn't get by him. And therefore, the team said, hey, Chico, move over, let Ocon through, and he will challenge Ricardo for the podium. And Checo said, no, let me race.
Said, and if he can get by me.
Well, and I think that side of it, first of all, I don't think the team were clear about what they wanted and what the strategy was. They asked, but he said, why? All I need is some traffic here, and I'm racing, guys. That's what you pay me the big bucks for. It's what you brought me here to do. I've got a good car. I'm chasing down Ricardo. I'm a second behind him. If he makes a mistake, I'm going to be on the podium.
If that's the case, that's the mistake. If they weren't clear, if they weren't crystal clear, that's the mistake.
Well, what they said was, they said, let Ocon through. He's on a different strategy. He's faster than you, but and he can beat Ricardo. If he can't beat Ricardo, we'll let you go past. It's a little bit of a, hey, I'm going to sell you this car, and I'll tell you what, you give me the money, and I'll be back next Saturday with the car. You're like, yeah, no, I'll tell you what, I'll keep the money.
And I'll meet you next Saturday.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't a good deal. And Checo's, you know, he's, as Lee Diffie described him, he's a bit of a bulldog.
Yeah.
And Lee Diffie summed it up well. He said, well, now he knows who his teammate is. Ocon, that put it is. Ocon now knows what he's dealing with. Checo is. He's a, you know, Checo is the only Mexican now in Formula One. He's a very proud racer. He's got a huge following, a lot of pride, And I think Checo's not, you know, he's not around to make the numbers up. He's a very fast racer. We've been impressed with him for the last two seasons. Sure. You know, he's had a rough time of it. He was at McLaren. Now he's at Force India. You know, he hasn't really hit the purple zone yet. But he was, as we saw at the end of last year, he was one of the most consistent guys out there. And he and Force India are, I mean, remember, they're nowhere near the size. They've got, you know, they're punching above their weights is what I'm getting at. And I think Checo actually is pushing that car as is Ocon. They're two very talented drivers.
Yeah. Well, the race started off good, too. We had a great first lap, lots of activity going on. Alonso getting on the radio, telling everyone to calm down. You know, Raikkonen hitting the grass on that restart lap. Did you see that?
Verstappen hitting Vettel.
Yeah. Yeah. And Verstappen, man, when he jumped out, what did he go from fourth to second? I guess it was.
Further back, he was third row. So, yeah.
Yeah. So he jumped up. He was, and obviously Verstappen with his engine failure, I guess it was like...
I felt for him because I think it could have been a more interesting race. Red Bull are not far away. This, the Canada race is obviously a horsepower race because of the long straights. So this is not the kind of place you expect if you've got a deficiency in your engine, as McLaren, 17 miles an hour down.
Yeah.
So that's what Alonso's dealing with. That's before it goes boop.
Yeah, and did you guys see that there was a couple of movie stars there? There was Michael Douglas,
yep,
and there was Patrick Stewart, right?
Yeah, Patrick Stewart,
oh, that
Captain
was fun
Picard.
To see him. Yeah, he's quite the character.
I love him, and he also he actually drank out of the 3-2-1. He did
oh,
the
that's right.
He did the show.
Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
There you go. Live long and prosper.
No, that's a different. No, that's no, different we're ruining era. Everything now.
Okay.
Ah, gee. Hey, you know, I got to call out one thing that I thought was really cool. Really happy to see Lance Stroll pulling some points in front of the home crowd.
Great story.
How cool
is
that?
Yeah, that was.
You know, that's the good old boy, and he's actually from like half an hour.
Literally half an hour. Yeah.
And so, you know, he's had to have watched this race from home before.
Somebody from being from Austin ran out to Elroy.
Did you hear what he said on the radio? He goes, finally, I got some points. Because he knows with Massa coming back this year and scoring all the points for Williams, with that Mercedes engine, they do have a package which is capable. And the poor kid, I mean, I remember he was in the Toyota series 2 years ago with me. I mean, we're talking about a kid here. And he really is just that. I'm really impressed. And the hardest part, he's a very wealthy young man, i.e. he comes from a very wealthy family. So what? But that always leads to people saying, well, you paid your way there and, you know, it's easy for you. And I always think that's harder for a guy. I mean, to do motorsport, you got to be wealthy. You know, it's
that's true. That's true. All right, guys. Well, we got to wrap it up on this segment. So when we come back, we are going to talk about IndyCar.
Yeah, baby.
And then also some MotoGP later in the show. You're listening to Speed City. We are live from Austin, Texas.
If you've ridden motorcycles in this part of the country for long, no doubt you know of Bud's Motorcycle Shop. Bud left this world a while back, but his legendary Harley service rides on. No longer is Bud's in downtown Austin, it is now Revell's Heavy Duty, and they've moved out by the Formula One track. You'll see all the familiar faces, so bring in your new, used, and abused, but there's no sign of shiny showroom prices. So check it out at Revell'sHeavyDuty.com.
Precision Camera and Video is the largest camera store in Texas with over 10,000 square feet and packed with all the latest manufacturer offerings. Founded in 1976 and still owned and operated by its founders Jerry and Rosemary Sullivan, Precision Camera is committed to the finest customer experience. With hand-picked products and on-hand experts, you won't find a more helpful, knowledgeable and accommodating sales staff for quality service. Come see for yourself, Precision Camera and Video, 2438 West Anderson Lane. The Racetrack. It's where legends are born, where only the finest machines earn their reputation for innovation and dominance. Such are the nameplates you'll find at Aston Martin of Austin, Lotus of Austin, Bentley Austin, and Rolls-Royce Motorcars. Austin exotic, iconic automobiles whose racing heritage turns everyday driving into an inspiring journey, because you're never just along for the ride. Highway 183 north of McNeil Road.
keep up with the latest breaking news in Austin and around the world.
Take a moment to make sure you're following us on Twitter at Talk1370.
Let the tweeting begin.
Just one more way to stay connected with Talk1370.
The right choice.
Talk1370. The right choice.
Hi, I'm Andrea De Vizioso, and this is Speed City.
Nice!
Andrea!
I bet our producer doesn't know that Andrea De Vizioso won the race today.
Yes, of course he does.
He's nod a, your head.
He's See? Brilliant, yeah.
He did know, exactly. okay.
He speaks Italian, he rides his... He rode in a Ducati in here. Dylan, I've seen it. He's got
his
a GP17 with number 99 on the side of it. Outside the studio.
All right, we're going to talk MotoGP
in a minute.
Boom.
But now we're going to talk IndyCar because it was a wild, crazy, scary, and at times, race up in Dallas
area.
And
I'm glad we dipped into the budget to make sure that we sent our reporter up there.
Yeah, we got, you know, we have a new intern of the show, Matt, and we sent him up there. And he said it was a blast. Matt, that's a pretty good one to go to on your first race.
Yeah, right? I mean, great race to go to for my first, you know, IndyCar race, to be there in person. I mean, what an amazing race. You know, being an F1 fan here, I mean, it was amazing to watch that racing there, how close they were every lap, you know, lap after lap after lap. I mean, just edge of your seat racing.
It's an amazing track too, because it's quite awe-inspiring. I mean, Indy 500 is beyond belief, because it's so huge. But Texas is quite unique because it's a cauldron. You know, it's a big bowl. It's almost gladiatorial. And when you see them, the first time I went, I was on the infield, and by the time my eyes had got round, they were coming back again. And it really is. It's really intense. I think it's the best word I can think of.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I mean, for the first, I think it was 30 laps that I was there. I mean, the speed that those cars get around that track, I think qualifying, they top out around 222 miles an hour. I mean, it just begs belief how quick they can get around those corners.
Yeah. So this year, there's some changes to the track. They changed up some of the apron in some of the areas. And so they actually extended the entrance to the pit lane. And, some
didn't
enjoyed it, some did not. Yeah, didn't make it wide enough for Hinch. Sorry, Mayor. But it's really interesting how that little change made such a difference. They actually took some of the angle out of the track itself, too.
Yeah. And they were also worried about, and I don't know how much you kind of, when you're there, notice it, but in the TV coverage, they were talking about too wide, and that wasn't, they went straight to that. They were talking about the track rubbering in because it was new, and that, you know, most people are on the low line, and then would there be a possibility later in the race to go three wide? Well, Marco Andretti decided to try that early, and no, there wasn't a three wide, and in fact, a few people fell foul of that. There really wasn't, you know, a high line on the track, but I think bottom line is you always worry when you resurface a track that it won't be the same, but it produced some great racing.
Oh, definitely.
What impressed you? What didn't you like?
Not much that I didn't like, actually. it was a really refreshing experience being just an F1 fan before this. But I think probably my favorite part of the race was the last 40 or so laps, where I think almost every lap, I think three rows down, they were two wide, three wide, you know, and those cars, they can't go three wide through some of those turns. You know, they have to work something out.
Just ask Alexander Rossi that question.
Yeah, no kidding. He was another one that fell far.
As he called it, the Ganassi sandwich.
Yeah. But there is a certain, I mean, you can also understand the camaraderie, which I think Fernando Alonso has managed to find very quickly, the respect that they all have with each other, because to race that close at that speed is very scary. I mean, you know, we've seen what happens when it goes wrong. Bourdais' accident, Dixon's accident, and obviously any of those. I mean, it was a massive pileup with Hinchcliffe with seven cars involved. You know, when you go there in real life, you really do see it, and the anticipation of something going wrong is on every corner.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
You're there a weekend, so did you have a favorite? Have you got a, all right, that's my go-to guy?
Yeah, I'm a big Graham Rahal guy. You know, first 20,000 fans, we got Graham Rahal bobblehead.
You got one.
So I'm a happy man. But,
there you go.
But hey,
great.
I mean, it was anyone's race. I mean, Rahal, he was all over the map throughout the race, but I think he ended up fourth place, which, I'm a happy guy.
Yeah. You had good seats, didn't you?
Yeah, we were, oh gosh, I think it was just outside of the pit exit, looking through turn one. So, you know, Ed Carpenter's spin, we saw that, Hinch's crash in the pits.
What spin? He did that on purpose. I think he gained three spots when he did that.
That's what we call Texas two-step.
Yeah, because everybody dodged.
No, it was good, and that Texas Motor Speedway is a great venue. If you've not been to an IndyCar race and you don't want to fight with 300,000 people at the 500, which I would advise you to do any day, but anyway, it's a great, especially for people from Texas, get up there and enjoy it because it is a great chance to see Indy. At one of its, you know, toughest circuits. It's not an easy track at all. It was interesting when the other drivers at the 500 were talking about Alonso's experience. They were saying, you know what, Montoya was one of the guys that said this, you know, it's not easy, the 500, but places like Texas are harder if you're not an oval guy. Because it's shorter reaction time, you're still going 220.
Yeah, good point.
And so, you know, I think that's a very, it's a very tough place, and there are even tougher ones. Iowa coming up and a few others.
Yeah, I'd heard that several of them don't like Texas because of that, because it's so fast continuously, you're pretty wide open, and that the slightest twitch can set off what we saw some of this weekend. Yeah. But that all is what makes it exciting, not the crashing, but the fact that it's so intense. That's what I get into.
Well, Matt's comment, and I mean, it's perfect, was it was anybody's race.
Yeah.
And it is the essence of the show tonight, which is Fernando Alonso has come back from the Indy 500, understood that fact, been part of it, led for 27 laps, loved every minute of it, got a lot of respect for the guys that do it, and then has gone back to his car in Canada, found himself fighting for one point, whoopee-doo, and then literally throwing the gloves in the crowd. McLaren did win at the weekend, I may add. They won the boat.
Really?
They won the boat race. Yeah.
I was going to say I didn't watch the right channel. Apparently,
yeah, no. They do a little. Everybody makes a raft, and McLaren won that race. But again, our cub reporter is deep into this. Why did McLaren win the Formula One race?
So McLaren, one of their engineers for their team, actually is a medal winner in rowing. So I think they had a little bit of advantage
Charlie
there.
Whiting! I want the FIA to take a closer look at this.
Oh, this is scandal brewing. I started right here.
Olympic rower! Well, that's going to say, the America's Cup now has as Olympic cyclists as their rope pullers, i.e. their grinders.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild.
You know, wasn't it true Raikkonen's Olympic swimmer wife was towing theirs?
Wait. No, you're thinking Bottas.
Was it Bottas?
Bottas has the Olympic swimmer.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
My wife doesn't swim. That's Raikkonen.
That's Raikkonen, if you can figure that one out. If you've never seen him do an interview.
I'm not sure.
You know, guys, I think my favorite part about that boat race, though, was seeing Ross Braun trying to balance on one of those homemade boats. I mean, that was so funny.
Yeah. And he was interviewed, actually. I saw it on the F1 site. He was interviewed by one of the reporters, and she gave the mic to him, and they hit the start sign, and off he went, and she literally had to grab the mic off him. Pretty funny. But it was great. Sean Bratches was involved, who's the commercial director for Formula One. Like you say, the motorsport director, Ross Brawn, was involved. It's a bit of fun, and I'm you know, you can see it visibly happening. Formula One opening up, having some fun, getting people involved, getting some good video out, showing that video to the fans, and being more inclusive. It's needed. It's a great sport. We love it. Everybody loves cars. Come on.
Well, what about some of the other action in the IndyCar race before we get away from that? I mean, there was a crash with Tony Kanaan and Hinchcliffe. And what do you think, Jonathan?
TK got himself in a few jams over the weekend.
Yeah.
He was involved in three incidents, actually. And he kind of put his hand up and said, yeah, you know, I could have avoided that one and maybe not so much in that one. But, you know, what we did discover is that three wide was just not possible. And if you found yourself in a sandwich, as Rossi did and as Hinchcliffe did, there's not a lot of ways to get out of it, frankly. So there was some good driving. There was what I think the biggest overlying thing for me, and it was when Hinchcliffe was interviewed, because Ganassi was interviewed before that, and Ganassi kind of blamed Hinchcliffe, and Hinchcliffe said, "Oh, that's adorable," which is quite funny. But the truth is, I think there was some very aggressive driving at an early part in the race. The last 40 minutes, as you, last 40 laps, as you say, sure, hell-bent for leather, go for it. Willpower coming through, as he always does. It, you know, the cream always rises. It was Power, it was Dixon, it was the right guys. Sato was up there too. Rahal, as you mentioned. But I do think there was some, there needs to be some thought process among some of the younger drivers. I thought Vautier, who came in for the
Indy Sebastian. I was going to ask you about him, yeah.
Really impressed. I mean, he's racing sports cars in Europe, and he led most of the race. It was pretty impressive. He'd not been in the car for 2 years.
That's pretty amazing, actually.
See, I'm just wondering what that's going to say, because, you know, we got that F1 Alonso guy that came in, and then he led quite a bit of the 500, and then we got this guy, and it's like, yeah, both. So what are the Indy people thinking? We're not letting those guys come back.
I don't think the IndyCar guys are frightened of the fact that young drivers or veteran drivers from Formula One or Europe can come over to Indy and be on it, because the world of motor racing, I think, is 500 drivers strong. And right. I'm talking single seaters here. And there's probably about 100 seats. Well, so there's probably 400 guys sitting at home, purely absolutely capable
of driving.
You've
been saying this forever.
For a long time, yeah.
Well, here's what I
mean, every
what
year, I really 33 guys graduate.
Yeah. What I really think about it is this was good for Indy cars to have guys like this come over to it. And quite honestly, I think it's good for the other sports as well. I'm sure there's IndyCar fans that now, I want to go see what he usually does. He did that good here. Let's see it.
You know, IndyCar is eating this up. If you notice on their Twitter feed, they have several tweets from the last 24 hours about they're retweeting Alonso, they're tweeting this about F1 and McLaren, but they also tweeted, we're trending worldwide, so I guarantee you guys they're running with this.
Well, and let's look at the very serious side of this. Since that breakup between Champ Car and kart racing, there's been a problem for IndyCar to get back to its glory days, because the split hurt them, whether you like it or not. And everybody from Bobby Rahal to Mark Miles to anybody will tell you that it hurt them badly. And in the last 3-4 years and the sort of century 500 period has been great for merchandise. Young guys are coming through. I've said this on the show many times. The likes of Graham Rahal, Oriel Servia, you know, lots of young guys, Hildebrand, Newgarten. These guys are good. And could they do it in Formula One? Kind of answering your question, yes, they could, actually. I really do think so. I mean, and Rossi's the perfect example.
Yeah.
Rossi has, you know, was good enough for Formula One, clearly. Couldn't get the drive to show his talents off. Ocon now doing it today, finally, you know, at Magnussen now, you know, getting up there. So, you know, let's put all of this sort of labels aside. These guys are all really talented in anything. You know, you put a jockey on another horse at the Belmont Stakes or at the, you know, or in, you know, in England at the Grand National, they would be good because they're good
rodeo,
jockeys.
Or rodeo.
Well, I don't know about that. That's a whole new game. No, rodeo, that's a whole, they're a whole no level up, I think.
All right, guys. Well, we got to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk some MotoGP and a couple other good, fun stuff. So stick with us here on Speed City here in Austin, Texas.
Precision Camera and Video is the largest camera store in Texas with over 10,000 square feet and packed with all the latest manufacturer offerings. Founded in 1976 and still owned and operated by its founders Jerry and Rosemary Sullivan, Precision Camera is committed to the finest customer experience. With hand-picked products and on-hand experts, you won't find a more helpful, knowledgeable and accommodating sales staff for quality service. Come see for yourself, Precision Camera and Video, 2438 West Anderson Lane.
MV Agusta motorcycles are the epitome of Italian style, precisely crafted with a passion for two-wheel art on wheels. Ducati Austin are the only MV Agusta and Ducati factory authorized technicians in Austin, servicing all European brands. Check the Brutale Sport Naked, the most extreme essential naked bike ever. Or the Turismo Veloce 800, the first revolutionary tourer to be built by MV Agusta.
Or if you want a pedigree steeped in racing, then look no further than the World Supersport winning triple F3, 675 and 800. Or go all out for the ultimate legendary F4 MV Agusta. Italian style with Texas soul. Trade-in, consignments welcome, and financing available. To Caddy Austin and the home of MV Agusta at 818 Breaker Lane, just east of I-35.
Texas weather can change on a dime.
Flash flooding is expected to begin shortly.
When the weather turns severe, turn to us for what you need to know. On air and online at talk1370.com. Talk 1370, the right choice.
Hey, Austin, wake up and fly right on Talk 1370.
Hi, Brendan Hartley. This is Speed City.
FIWEC is going to be coming soon
September,
here.
September, baby. Hartley Brendan here. Hartley and the boys. Lots Le Mans boys, is next week.
I know, I was going to say.
That's... Brendan Hartley will be one of the favorites.
Now, that's going to be absolutely exciting. Did you guys notice all the motorcycles in town? They had the Rot Rally here.
Yes.
And of course, I live off 2222, so that's where every motorcyclist who comes to Austin wants to go drive out that way and go see the hill country. So we're sitting at a stoplight this afternoon, me and my wife, and a bike pulled up, and I said, "Oh, Moto Guzzi." And she goes, what's up with that? I said, "Well, most of the guys that come to the Rot Rally are riding Harleys." And she goes, "Well, that sure is a cute bag he has on."
Now, okay, I was out with all my two-wheel buddies this weekend, and I will say there's a pleasant growth in female riders that are riding and driving their own motorcycles.
But
and
do you have to have the cute bag to have the Moto Guzzi?
You have to ask the ladies. I don't know. I'm going to guess it was a lady.
What kind of bag was it?
It was just
a saddle bag, or was
no,
it?
No, it was over his shoulder, over his back. It was a backpack, but it was not a normal backpack.
We have French people here.
Oh, oui, oui.
come on, allez-vous.
Anyway, y'all Rot Rally friends, be careful on your way out. And actually, you know, there was a very cool open house our advertiser had with Ravel's Heavy Duty. Great turnout out there.
Cool.
Lots of fun things.
Out by the track, yeah.
Motorcycle Missions gave away their bike Saturday night to a well-deserving veteran.
Cool.
And I got to see that one. They're getting ready to start their next build, which is a 1958 Harley.
Ooh.
That's going to be a custom build from it.
So, you had me at 1958, actually. It's
going to be a cool build.
Well, hey, guys, let's talk about some MotoGP, speaking of motorcycles.
Yeah.
A little bit warm. I think this is kind of the overwhelming theme.
Track temperature 54. That's hot.
That in some centigrades?
Oh, darn hot.
Real hot.
Like tire melting.
You don't want to sit down. Put it that way.
Hey, you know, that was a great run. I love the start of it. That was just insane. Petrucci and Marquez coming up for a quick rumble right at the beginning. Petrucci comes right all the way across from the far right to the far left and body checks Marquez.
Yeah, Petrucci didn't have the blinkers on the horse. Well, anyway, he had the blinkers on his horse because he had both blinkers on both sides, both the bike and him, because he just almost took Marquez out.
Blasted him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he almost got the bad end of it because Marquez stayed on his bike straight up and went on. Petrucci kind of had to pull himself back on and continue, but that's the way I feel like that race went from the beginning.
It was an odd race because it was all about the heat and all about basically tire management. And right from the get-go, all weekend long, they were saying that, you know, the medium compound would not last the race, which Rossi chose to use because he couldn't use the harder compound or make it work at all. Lorenzo chose the harder compound and went right to the front and then went backwards and then came back again. So it was all a case of, you know, trying to use and manage the tire throughout the race. Meanwhile, the Honda story continues apace because Danny Pedrosa, no question about it, I want to make a footnote here, he's been much maligned and I've done it in my commentary here at Austin, is Danny going to keep that job? And I think now that's Sete Gibernau, former world champion himself and Spaniard, has now basically taken him on to mentor him. And again today, he's a different Danny. Danny has, you know, the boy has grown up. And I think Sete is helping amazingly. And his confidence is sky high. He was pole position today. He didn't win the race, but he rode really well. Marquez was Marquez. You know, he's always about to fall off. His brother won, which was awesome. But the truth of the matter is, Dovi doubles.
That is huge, isn't it?
I mean, this is cool.
Yeah, it's very, it's cool too. I love it when Ducati does well.
Well, it's more than that. I mean, he broke a record that's never been done, Mugello, by being an Italian on an Italian machine, winning in Italy. Oh, I mean, you know, it just, that's it. You'll never buy a drink again in Italy. And then he backs it up with another victory. His confidence will be sky high now. And if Ducati can keep this up, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how they go at Assen in 2 weeks, which is always a tough one because of the weather, but it is going to be in summer this time, so it usually rains. But it's bottom line, it's heating up into a really good championship. And why haven't we mentioned Vinales? Why haven't we mentioned Rossi?
Yeah,
because they weren't there today. They stayed at home, basically. Well, yeah, they didn't have the tires.
Stayed towards the back.
Stayed towards the back. Vinales was nowhere. Rossi was trying. Rossi got up to about seventh at one point, but dropped back. The Yamaha just didn't like the tires and the place, but I can assure you they'll bounce back. Vinales' lead is slender now. He's still got the lead, but Dovi's now second. We got a championship, folks. We got a really good championship on our hands, and I urge you to get the app, get Be In Sports, and tune in and watch or listen to our show. We'll keep you up to date with it, but it really is hotting up to be one of the closest championships in years.
Yeah, and Zarco did good again. What was he, fourth, fifth?
Yeah, he had a great battle with his teammate. Zarco's definitely the revelation, the story of the year in many ways. Johann Zarco coming up to MotoGP as a former Moto2 champion.
He was last two years, right? Yeah. So, yeah, that's been fun to watch.
You know, another fast Frenchman.
Yeah. And what are the other stories? I mean, there was, or where was Valentino? He ended up in eighth?
Yeah, he ended up in eighth, but I mean, he started 13th. He didn't make second qualifying, which is, I've never seen that.
I thought that was really odd. And I was wondering if it was tire related or not. I mean, there's a lot of noise around tires. But honestly, it totally upset the grid. I mean, you looked at it and it just wasn't anything like you're used to seeing with, you know, certainly Valley out back and, you know, Marquez was still up front. Vinales was towards the rear. I mean, it was all just, it looked like a 52 card pickup for setting the grid.
Yeah, and all, exactly. I also think, though, that it was definitely universal at Yamaha because Vinales, who's been, you know, the man of the moment. I mean, we've never stopped talking about Vinales, and suddenly he's not even, you know, he's not even on the grid kind of thing. He's nowhere. So a very disappointing weekend for Yamaha. They're going to scratch their heads, I'm sure, over that. But still interesting and great for Dovi. Really good for Dovi.
Yep, absolutely. I love it. Like I said, when Ducati's doing good, I mean, you think of them being so small compared to the big team. That's why it's fun to me.
And don't write Jorge Lorenzo off. He was once again front row start. He struggled with the tires, but actually his tire management was superb because he recovered in the last eight laps and actually got the better result out of everybody struggling with tires over the weekend. So, you know, another good result for Jorge.
Yeah, Jorge Lorenzo was in fourth.
We haven't got much longer, and I want to break a story here.
Okay.
It's not really breaking a story, but we've been talking about this all night, and we've only got a couple of minutes, and I want to go out on this. Mark Miles has said that McLaren is considering a full-time Indy team next year.
Wow.
So it adds to the Fernando story. And why that makes sense is McLaren sell high-end motor cars here in the States, their biggest market, based in New York. It makes a lot of sense. And at branding point of view, forget Honda for a second, they're talking about a team as a full McLaren team to be the size of Chip Ganassi stroke, you know, an Enterprise. And Mark Miles says that in his talks with Zak Brown, McLaren hope to be back at the Indianapolis 500 and are looking at doing a full season as McLaren. That doesn't have necessarily anything to do with Fernando, but interesting story and one that actually adds fuel to that Fernando story of where he could have a home and where he could build with McLaren as a brand. Never mind Honda. You don't have to, you know, who cares? You could, and the other rumor would be maybe joining Graham Rahal as a second member of that team. So how about, I just want to throw that out.
Yeah, I love it. I saw an
and
orange
that's from
McLaren.
Mark Miles on Auto Week. That was an Auto Week story.
Yeah, cool. One last thing, Jonathan, I want to say congrats to your uncle, Brian Redman, who got inducted into the Motorsport Magazine Hall of Fame.
I know.
That's pretty cool.
It's pretty darn cool, actually. I'm really pleased for him. Those who know motor racing know the name Brian Redman, and certainly the racing fraternity is well aware of Brian Redman. But the bigger fraternity of motor racing isn't as well known because he didn't get lots of world championships. He was very successful here in the States, did a bit of Formula One, but was into the Hall of Fame as one of the top sports car guys.
Well, so congratulate him for us.
To know him.
Yep. All right, we got to run. Thanks for tuning into Speed City this week. We will talk to you next week. Check us out on the website, speedcitybroadcast.com, Twitter, Facebook, all the rest, FaceTube, whatever you got.
Ciao, y'all.
Ciao, y'all. FaceTube.
Whatever you got.
That's what I said. Y'all.
Keep up with the latest headlines from Austin and beyond on the all-new Talk1370.com. Stay informed with the latest news, weather, contests, and more. It's all just a click away at Talk1370.com. Just one more way to stay connected with Talk1370.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky. But Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Let me enjoy this for a minute.
Right now is your last chance to shop Blinds.com's year-end blowout sale. Save up to 50% off with minimum purchase, plus a free professional measure. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback. I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
The holidays are behind us and school routines are back. Now is the time to help your kids start the new semester strong. IXL helps students refresh what they learned in the fall so they head into the new year feeling confident and prepared. With new units and new goals, IXL is the simplest way to build better habits and stay on top of lessons without the stress. As teachers dive into new material, kids can practice those exact same skills at home to make sure the lessons really stick. IXL is an award-winning platform covering math, language arts, science, and social studies for pre-K through 12th grade. It's personalized, interactive, and actually fun. Keep your kids motivated for the second half of the year at IXL.com. Don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.